More on why your property rights are fading away next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today, as usual, in the co-host chair is my Vice Chairman, fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And it's good to be back to do this interview with a great fighter for American liberty and freedom, Tom DeWeese.
And Tom has been our guest. If you were with us yesterday, we were talking a little bit about the background and some of the things that Tom has been involved in over 43 years of being in the fight for liberty. And what we got into toward the end of the program yesterday was discussion of the whole issue of private property rights and how it's only been in Western civilization, and specifically in America, that we've had the blessing of the liberty of the pursuit of happiness, as Jefferson would call it. In other words, the right of private property. And how that many observers from third world countries and others look to us and say, that is the key to breaking the chains of poverty, to breaking the chains of dependence upon government, is private property ownership. Now, Tom, we talked a little bit about that. One of the things we didn't talk about yesterday was your website where people can go and get more information, and that's AmericanPolicy.org.
Correct.
Definitely do that. And Tom speaks probably as much as anybody I know. He goes around the country and speaks. He has been on the West Coast, the East Coast, the North Coast, the South, the Left Coast. He has been everywhere speaking the gospel of private property, of why we have a tax coming not just from foreign entities like the United Nations, but from our own legislators against our property rights. Now, I was going to say yesterday, I missed saying this, but the big problem is going to be when somebody like a Hernando de Soto, who wrote The Mystery of Capital, looks at the West here in a few years, he's not going to recognize it being any different than his own country.
That'll be the case. And again, what he found as he went around the world checking, he wanted to find out what it was, what the atmosphere was for private property. And he went to several countries. For example, he found that in Mexico, to register land in your name takes you about 25 years to get that done. And you got to grease a lot of palms in order to do that. In his own country of Peru, he found that it would cost something like $12,000 to establish a business. Again, greasing a lot of palms. When you're in a country where the average income is maybe $6,000 a year, it's impossible to start a new business. Going to the Philippines, he found that to get private property registered in your name, you had to go to all the neighbors in a whole area, like a homeowners association, and get them all to approve. I mean, this is the kind of thing people go through, and what you end up with, and people understand private property ownership. They, if you go to people in a lot of these countries, you will find that they believe they own their property, and they make payments on it, and they'll tell you, oh, yes, this is mine. You ask them for what kind of documentation they have on that. They don't have any. And so they can't use it for equity loans. They can't use it to build wealth with, you know, even though they recognize that it is theirs. And so this is what happens across the world.
The thought that occurs to me here in this country, because we think back, and I'm sure our listeners remember things like the Kelo decision, which basically said that a private property could be taken by a government entity if they can find a better use for it to get more taxes from the property than what a residential property owner could pay or would be assessed at paying. And this is something that went all the way to our United States Supreme Court and was upheld.
Yeah.
Those are some of the issues that we're dealing with here. And we see every year, and I'm sure you see it, because one of the things Tom does is he keeps an eye on Congress. You're about, what, an hour away from Washington, D.C.? But he keeps a very close eye on Congress.
A safe distance.
But he issues, and I'm going to suggest to everybody, go to the website, go to AmericanPolicy.org, and sign up for Tom's sledgehammer report. Because, honestly, it is a sledgehammer, because when he gets a congressman or some leader out there who's promoting some idiotic policy to take away your liberties, Tom pounds them over the head with this sledgehammer report. It's an email alert that goes out to you, and you then turn around and take action. Now, Tom, that's one of the things people can do, but let's talk a little bit more, if we could, because, you know, Chuck, you live in the People's Republic of Taxterville.
That's right, Taxterville.
And we're looking at all the ways we're subtly losing our property rights. Now, I mean, DeSoto would say 25 years for somebody to be able to outright own a piece of property. Well, for us, it's 30 years, and we never totally own it, because you miss those property taxes 1 year, and pretty soon you're going to see the sheriff's cars coming in and padlocking your house and saying that you don't own your property anymore, whether it goes back to the bank or it goes to the government because you didn't pay your taxes.
I always thought, you know, Robert E. Lee lost Arlington House, his family home, which is now Arlington Cemetery. They decided to build to bury the dead from his armies in his front yard.
Yeah.
But
yes.
The reason he lost it was because of property taxes. Yes. And I always thought that he should have marched the Confederate Army down Pennsylvania Avenue and paid the taxes.
Actually, yeah, you may not know this. Mrs. Lee did attempt to pay the taxes.
She did. And
they wouldn't take the money.
They wouldn't take the money.
Yeah, they wanted to, yeah.
Yeah.
Punish them. But anyway, I digress. It's but
again, it's we have a long history of usurpations of property rights in this country. What do you see now? I mean, from your vantage point of sitting there about an hour outside of Washington, D.C., I mean, where it's kind of like the old days. We kind of get the news secondhand about a week after they've already passed legislation that's taking away more of our rights, like NDAA and other issues of that nature.
Congress is totally clueless on the issue of private property rights. They have bought into this attitude that the community needs to be involved. Of course, the Kelo decision was an absolute shock. There was absolutely no precedence ever in the history of the United States, anything where the Supreme Court would come up with this decision, that if the community could find a better use for your property and make more money for the community, for the common good, for the greater good, then that was okay. They could just take it. Well, what you end up with is collusion between certain selected developers and city councilmen or county commissioners, whatever the case may be, that they can all get together and for the common good, they can take your property and take it for some other purpose, for a private purpose. Jefferson, Adams, Washington all said over and over again, private property is the key to liberty. If you don't have private property to stand on to declare your independence, it doesn't matter if you got Second Amendment rights, it doesn't matter, you know, any other rights that we're supposedly to have. If you don't have private property to stand on, you're standing on government property, you have no rights.
Yeah, and by private property, they actually meant truly you were the owner and more or less the king of that property. And as long as you were not infringing upon the rights of your neighbor by maybe drilling a sideways well to get at his water under his place, or something along that line, that the technology didn't exist at the time.
And that can also be used, that argument can also be used in the issue of pollution.
Sure.
If you are polluting that hurts your neighbor's land, or you know, sound pollution or anything like that, then yeah, there's violations. And we have had on the books nuisance laws and other things since the beginning of time where these things can, you know, you can protect your private property that way. But using those excuses of pollution, noise pollution, light pollution, I love that one, light pollution, view sheds, watersheds, yada, yada, yada. Using all those excuses, wetlands, they are using that as an excuse to take your private property, take away your ability to have anything to say about it. I'm hearing over and over again horror stories of agents coming out, the person who's supposed to be in charge of issuing planning permits or building permits and so forth, will come out and tell a homeowner, oh yeah, you can do that. And the homeowner starts to tear down their porch, they're going to build a new one in it, and suddenly he shows up and says, oh no, you can't do that. Now you've already destroyed part of your property, and he won't let you rebuild it, he won't let you do what you're going to do.
Won't issue the new permit.
This is a tyranny of people who have absolutely no controls over them. And this is what is happening, and your county commissioners, your city councilmen are absolutely betraying their citizens when they let this kind of omnipotent power be in control.
A real quickie, in the Soviet Socialist Republic of Taxterville, you almost can't get on city council unless you've done a stint on the planning or zoning committee or maybe one of the parks and rec committees. But the fact is, people actually vote for those people. And I have always said when they come around to knock on the door, did you serve on the planning committee or the zoning committee? And they say yes, and I'm like, I will not vote for you under any circumstances. The planning and zoning committee is not the friend of anyone's property rights in this city, so, or any place else.
And this is the way they are usurping power. Non-elected boards, councils, governments, regional governments, you have planning boards, you have water boards, you have, you know, and who voted for them? And that's the problem.
And that's the bottom line.
Well, and that's the whole point, though, is nobody has voted for them because they're appointed by the officials who you did vote for, but people don't take the time or the effort. They're too apathetic to realize that, okay, you know what? If this person's doing this in this appointed position, we're going to hold the elected board who appointed them responsible for their actions. We don't have that. But, Tom, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this because, again, we're not against protecting someone's right to the enjoyment of their own property. That's what we're talking about here. So some things, like, there are some nuisance issues. You don't want somebody, if you're in a neighborhood and then somebody decides that they're going to bring in a heavy drilling operation and start hydraulic fracturing right in their backyard. That may be a little bit much, but but the key to where I think the government comes in and starts taking away those historic property rights is that they frame it in the issue of rights, riparian rights, access rights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Have you seen that being more and more the case?
Oh, absolutely. And again, back to your example with the drilling and so forth, anytime that you can prove that an activity like that is damaging, your neighbor can prove that it's damaging his property, that's a different story.
Yes.
Otherwise, have at it.
Have at it if it's not. That's right.
And, who are these government agents who have the right to the power to tell you anything? You want to put new windows, a new roof on your house, build a new porch on it, you have to get permits to do that. And, the old adage, follow the money, is the truest thing ever said, because every one of these cases, you follow the money. And where this is all coming from, and this is what I'm speaking about across the country, is I mentioned the environmental movement from the late 80s, early 90s. They came together in one massive picnic meeting in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro, and they put together their dream, and they called it Agenda 21, and they call it an agenda for a reason. It is an agenda for the complete restructuring of our society. And it's all based on the idea that everything man does damages the environment, and man is nothing but just swarms in on the environment and sucks it clean as there's nothing left. Nothing good comes from man. This is a philosophy. So when you have that philosophy to start with, nothing good for man can come out of that. And that's what we're seeing. And people accuse us of bringing out a conspiracy theory, that this is a United Nations conspiracy theory. Well, here's the conspiracy. Here's how it operates. It starts at the UN, where these organizations, these non-governmental organizations, Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, these kind of groups, International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, or ICLEI, they helped write this agenda. It's their dream. It's what they want. And that slowly works its way into a document that world leaders come to these massive meetings, including George H.W. Bush in this case, signed onto Agenda 21, brings it to America, and then it gets into our bureaucracy. The same NGO groups that helped write it in the first place now surround our congressmen, our senators, their staffs, the people who write legislation, guide them to write this legislation, guide them to create grant programs to help pay for these programs. Then they go to the state legislatures and they say, this new regulation is coming down and we can help you with that. And they get the legislatures to write legislation that makes it mandatory that local communities do comprehensive planning studies and put these programs together. And, oh, by the way, here's a grant program that can help you pay for it. And the very same NGO groups who helped write this thing in the first place go into the local community and say, hey, you now have to put together these comprehensive development plans. We can help you do that. There's the conspiracy. It starts from the top at the United Nations, and they bring it all the way down step by step into your backyard.
Which just goes to show you that just because you're paranoid doesn't mean that people aren't out to get you.
Absolutely. That's right. True.
Well, Tom, it kind of reminds me of something I think Frederick Bastiat said in his book, The Law, that these people consider themselves like a legislator, to be made of finer stuff than everybody else. And so they, because you're poor sheep who really just don't get the whole picture, we'll go ahead and take care of it for you and we'll send you the bill for it. Because that's where they're getting these grants and this money from. It's from taxes, it's from fees, it's from regulations, it's from all this green economy that we're talking about. The only green in that economy is your hard-earned tax dollars being funneled to their pet agenda so that then they can take away more of your freedoms.
Down a green rat hole.
Down a green rat hole, that's right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be continuing this on our Saturday edition, so join us tomorrow at noon on Saturday. We're going to be talking to Tom more in depth about Agenda 21, ICLEI, and your local communities, and what you are about to experience and how you can get this agenda stopped. Tom's had a lot of success in doing that in a number of communities, and we're going to talk about that a little bit tomorrow.
And Tom, before we go off, just give us your website one more time.
It's AmericanPolicy.org. You can also go to DeweseReport.com, DeweseReport report. It is my monthly newsletter, and you can also see my book there. called Now Tell Me I Was Wrong.
And actually, I've read excerpts from it. I haven't gotten a copy yet, so I'm going to have to work that out. Join us tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.